They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Joining me today on the Commons is a friend of mine, and you haven't heard from Sarah for a long time. But Sarah Benson is in the mountains at the Maison Rouge on the East Coast. We're on the same coast for a change. And so, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited and looking forward to talking to you with all my friends eavesdropping and listening in.
Thank you, Shu. It's a pleasure.
You'd better say that, right? No.
Yeah.
No, listen, for those of you who do not know, Sarah has co-written a book with Don DeBatt called Escaping Condo Jail, The Keys to Navigating Risks and Surviving Perils of the quote-unquote carefree community lifestyle. Boy, there's nothing carefree about it, is there, Sarah?
Not at all.
So the book is 2 years old now?
Correct. It was published in 2014. Most of the research, we started writing it in 2010.
Wow.
A little bit before that. It was 4.5 years of writing and research. And since the book came out, we have had so many more reports of abuse, of theft, of huge unimaginable special assessments. The landscape has changed dramatically. And in 2011, 12, 13, when we were actively writing the book, we were still suffering from the recession. But even now, when other forms of housing have recovered, homeowners associations and condominiums in particular have not recovered.
That's interesting that you should say that, because the whole sales on these stupid things is that they will protect property values, and in fact they're not protecting property values, are they?
In many cases they are worsening property values.
Sarah, I've heard so many comments and I've had so much feedback on the book. People love it, and considering the fact that it's almost 600 pages, they'll sit down and read every word. And they'll go back and reread some of it. And so that's the feedback I've been getting, and I have nothing whatsoever to do with the book. But what have you been getting? What have you been hearing from your readers?
Well, one of the highest compliments I've received on the book, there is a columnist. His name is Benny Cass.
Oh, yeah, I know Benny, right here in Washington, D.C. Yes.
Exactly, and I was fortunate enough to have lunch with him earlier this year. And after the lunch, Don DeBatt went back to his office, and sitting on his desk was a copy of our book. And Benny's son came out and said, "That book is my father's Bible."
Really? So Benny uses it. That's high praise indeed, because Benny's been doing the Washington Post column for 100 years almost.
And Benny was instrumental in getting the Freedom of Information Act passed, and many people don't know that. He was just a cub back in the day, but he is just brilliant, and the fact that he actually mentioned our book in one of his columns was just the highest praise that I could ever receive, or, you know, that Don and I could receive from someone of his stature.
So the book, let's touch a little bit on the book. The book talks about a lot of the issues and a lot of the problems, and you give survival tips. And tell us what the book is about.
A little bit,
just a few minutes, because you don't want you want people to actually buy it and read it for themselves.
How much time do you have, Shu?
We've got an hour. Go for it, kiddo.
I've been in real estate for more than three decades, and I could never find, first of all, as a realtor, there was never any special education for realtors on the subject of HOAs or condominium associations.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. So you're staring out at this desert, and there's no literature. And what little literature there was out there was predominantly, you know, individuals that published books because they had a personal rant. And so it was my goal to come up with a comprehensive digest, an encyclopedia in some ways, that one could reference piece by piece. You don't have to sit down and read the whole book all at once. But if you have a problem with bully boards, you can look in the index and look up the word bully, and then you can find your solution in the book. And the same thing if you had a question about special assessments or liens in particular or foreclosure. Those things are all addressed in the book, and they're referenced. It's very much written like a textbook in many ways.
What I love is the humor that you use in a lot of the subtitles. Oh, God, I can't breathe. The whole building is leaking like a sieve. Don't let the bed bugs bite. And you scratch at the problem, don't you? Didn't your mother ever tell you not to scratch? No.
Scratching at the problem, yeah. Let me tell you right now, that's all Don DeBat. He's the funny one. He's a headline writer. He's been a journalist forever. And having worked for two major newspapers as a real estate editor, he knows how to write a punchy, catchy, you know, headline. And so all of that and all of the references in the book to movies and actors, that's all Don DeBat.
I'm going to have to talk to him.
Yes, he loves cinema. That's one of his hobbies. So you'll see, John Belushi or whatever character that appears in that book. Those are all, Don DeBat's contributions.
So what have your readers been telling you about the book? What do they like about it? What is it that they're telling you? I know what they're telling me, but I want to know what they're telling you.
The only problem, the only negative feedback we've had is that the book is too comprehensive, that people don't like to read, per se. And that's unfortunate. Everybody wants things in very small bites.
Yeah.
And when we wrote the book, we did put it in small bites. We put it in small sections with the subheads so that you didn't have to read and read and read and read. It's broken up. But the next edition will probably be substantially, it won't be as big of a book. It'll probably be half the size, but it will have all of the updates, these stories that have come out from the readers of the book. You know, they call and say, you wouldn't believe I was just special assessed $200,000. Well, I had never heard of a special assessment that high when we wrote the book. Maybe $50,000, maybe $75,000, but not $125,000 or $200,000 on one unit.
Yeah. No, I've heard that. No, I've heard that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and it's not brand new. This is going back a few years. But what's really scary is that at one point there was a list, an email list, where a lot of the managers and CAI-affiliated attorneys were on there with a smattering of homeowners because, you know, in the early days there were just four or five of us. And the managers were chastising the homeowners because they were being greedy for not wanting to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in special assessments. What's wrong with you people? Don't you know you owe it to the association? You owe it to the association. I was absolutely flabbergasted.
Well, that quote in the CAI video with Byron
Hankey, yeah.
What did she say? Get to it. You don't want the homeowners to have control?
Yeah. I talked to Byron Hankey, I talked to Link Cummings, and they were two of the people who sort of got this whole thing started and off the ground. And I asked Byron, I said, what on earth? I mean, why did you do it? He said that it was a way of showing the government that they could bring all of the interests under one umbrella and have everybody work together. So that was what I was told, that the reason we have CAI now. Because without the funding, without the financing, and you know that as a realtor, if you don't have the money, you're not going to be able to sell those leaky condos to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to make sure there was a steady supply of government-backed mortgages.
Well, you really need to talk with Don about that. He was at the convention. And I think it was the National Association of Home Builders Convention.
When?
Back in 1963.
63, okay.
When they were passing that FHA stuff. And he was there. He was with the home builders, and he was reporting on this big change. So, of course, I wasn't around then. But
you were a twinkle in your mommy's eye.
Something, I hope so. but he might know more about that. He speaks of that sometimes, about the FHA and homeowners associations. It was a big, big, big change.
Oh, it was a huge change, yeah.
And I think Byron used to work. He was he worked for FHA, didn't he?
Yeah. No, not FHA. HUD, I think. He was a landscape architect. He was a city planner, not a landscape architect, a city planner. And mm-hmm. he watched, what he told me was that he watched the suburbs grow. And everything was being built on a grid. And he didn't think that it was aesthetically pleasing. So he wanted to be able to put it all together into a much more aesthetically pleasing suburban environment. So he went and talked to the local municipal governments and said, here, why don't we have some curvilinear streets here and a few cul-de-sacs that would make it a lot safer for the kids to play. And if people can't just go through all the way through, they're less likely to come into the development. And that all really makes sense. So if you have someone who's going through and they're just going to go through and steal and rob and do whatever it is they're going to do, they're just going to keep driving by through the subdivision. But if they're going to run into a dead end, if it's going to come into a cul-de-sac, if it's going to end up curling around and going back, their escape route is blocked off. So that was
exactly
what he sold them. I mean, that made perfectly good sense. On the other hand, the local municipality said, yeah, it may be more aesthetically pleasing. It may be safer. However, it's much more expensive to go in and remove the trash and, plow the streets and all of that. So for that reason, we don't want it. Now, to fund it, he says, well, what if we got the homeowners to pay that? And they said, oh, it'll never happen. Well, they did. I mean, they got the homeowners to pay it. And once local municipalities saw how easy it was to fool the people, they then started mandating them. So that's how we ended up where we are.
Well, Don and I mentioned in the book, there was one Florida real estate developer And as we all know, when this first started out, it was, you know, it was the home builders that were supportive of this form of housing.
Oh, absolutely.
One develop, and then later it became management companies and attorneys. But one developer in Florida said, I would give the condominiums away in order to maintain the cash flow from the amenities. Because in many cases, the developer has that into perpetuity. And it's a cash cow for the developer. And it can go on, as we know, for years and years and years and years and years.
In Texas, they had management companies who were going around to associations and offering to manage them for free, provided they kept the fines and all of the income, the revenue from selling, you know, copies of the covenants, you know, all of that stuff. So there was enough money there for them to do it for free. And you can imagine, with no adult supervision anywhere in sight when it comes to finding people, away we go.
Oh, you can make it up. You can just make it up.
They were making it up.
I've never heard of that. What state was that in?
That was in Texas. Yeah, I covered that. One of my early shows. That was one of the early shows that I did. Yeah, I had an attorney who contacted me, and we talked about that. It was sort of, they were bounty hunters. They were going around offering their services for free. We will manage the association for free. We get to keep all the fines and all the rest of the stuff. You sound stunned. I hope you're leaning against that tree.
I am. And not only, you can't see me, but my mouth is open and I'm shaking my head back and forth. I just can't believe it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, the stuff that goes on in these things. The stuff that goes on. And that's why I need to write my book.
You really do, Shu. You know where all the bodies are buried. I'm constantly amazed.
That's what happens when you're around as long as I've been. And talk to as many people as I have. I mean, I've met Byron Hankey. I've met a lot of these people, and I've asked them, what the hell were you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And their answers have always been sort of fairly plausible. It's like, yeah, well. But then greed took over, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, the term that came up yesterday, which was new to me, was community socialism.
Yeah.
And that was in a book on community associations.
Yeah.
And they're calling it community socialism.
Yeah.
And really, you know, they're really, I think Jill out there in, where's Jill Schreiser?
She's in Arizona.
Arizona. I think she's on to something in terms of having a disclosure signed. All buyers should sign a disclosure that they understand that they're subject to fines, they understand that they're subject to foreclosure, and they understand that they're waiving their constitutional rights.
When one time when Evan McKenzie was on, and he talked about this, well, you agreed nonsense, he says that's ridiculous. You never agreed to it. And he recommended, way back years ago when he was on, he recommended that you have a statement that you actually sign with each one of these things that you allegedly give up.
Exactly.
And people don't realize it, but you know as well as I do, Sarah, it's an emotional purchase. You take someone into that condo or into that house, and they're going to fall in love with the sofa that's not going to stay there. It smells like mm-hmm. grandma's brownies, so they're going to stay, you know, that's what they're going to fall in love with. They don't want to kick the tires. They don't want to look under the hood. They just smell it. They look at the view. They see that cozy, comfy chair with an open book, and they can just imagine themselves sitting there. The book's going to be gone, the chair's going to be gone, you know, but they don't, it doesn't, they don't process that. It doesn't make any sense.
No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely.
And as an agent, you want them to buy it. So, I mean, you're going to stage that place to the hilt, and people are going to move in emotionally. They're going to buy it. And then they're going to come after you because they're being assessed a special assessment, and you didn't tell them. They weren't
exactly.
listening, and mm-hmm. they weren't listening. They weren't listening. They don't want to.
Well, exactly. And what I found of interest, one of the National Association of Realtors political affairs people reached out to me earlier this month. They come up with a hot topic every month. And for the first time, the hot topic last month was homeowners association. So I'm following. Did I send that to you, Shu?
I don't think so. You know, I've been buried under so much stuff lately, Sarah, that you may have. And also, my email was just bouncing all over the place for some reason. Yeah, Cox was just bouncing all my emails. So I spent a day on the phone with them getting that sorted out. But I lost a lot of emails.
I'll send it to you again. It's a very interesting article. And what's more important is that the National Association of Realtors is starting to recognize homeowners associations as something that needs attention urgently. And so it's not something that we can keep burying, you know, sweeping under the carpet and, you know, with the smell of brownies and all the, you know, the rocking chair and the book. It's becoming critical mass, in my opinion. And to have the National Association of Realtors pick it up as a hot topic, I think is of interest, of note.
It's about time. It's really
it's about time.
It's about time. Because they drank the Kool-Aid in the early days, and they were giving all this nonsense and malarney. And as a former realtor, you know, I used to talk about HOAs and the perils of HOAs and all of that. And they didn't want to hear it because I was just really, you don't talk badly about the product you're trying to sell. But they started coming to me and saying, Shu, I sold this condo, I sold this house, and now my clients are coming after me, and I can't afford to have that happen. I cannot afford that.
Well, absolutely. And the really sad fact is, when you go on any of these, most of the multiple listing service systems are being syndicated on the Internet, so
mm-hmm.
you have Trulia and Zillow and ActiveBrain
yeah.
and Realtor.com. And the really sad fact is that there is no distinction when it comes to single-family homes, whether it's in an HOA or not. You cannot filter that stuff because the realtors don't put that information in the MLS. Often they don't even know.
That's
it's a shame. It's a real shame. If I go in and I say I want a single family home, not in an HOA, I cannot filter by that.
Really?
As a consumer. Yes. I can filter by number of bedrooms or lakefront or fireplace or central air, but I cannot filter by HOA.
In my day, it was HOA fee. If there was none, it would say none.
A lot of times it's shocking how often realtors don't even, or I should say real estate brokers, do not even ask the question. They go to the single family home. The HOA land really isn't even on their radar in many cases. Mm-hmm. And they might find out, you know, once they get a contract, oh, by the way, there's an HOA fee of $400 a year or $400 a month, you know. But it's not a field, but you're correct. As a real estate broker going into the multiple listing service, I can filter by that dollar amount assessment. But on the Internet, the consumer has no way of filtering.
Yeah. So many realtors now are advertising that, it, you know, no HOA because people want that.
Yes, Yes, you're exactly right.
And but they've always been doing that. You know, they're, mm-hmm. and no HOA here, so people come because they know people don't want them. People don't want them. I think they're starting to buy into that. So are you getting a whole lot of emails, calls, feedback on the book with people telling you what's going on in their little corners of condo jail?
Oh, shoo. You know the answer to that. Absolutely.
I know, but I want my listeners to hear it from you.
I'll tell you, you know what it's like to be a lightning rod for this type of, you know, for people with problems in their HOAs.
Yeah.
The saddest part of becoming a go-to source is that the majority of the calls that I get or the emails are from older people,
yeah.
and particularly women
yes.
or widows,
yes.
whose homes are paid for in full,
yes.
and who may be ill.
They're vulnerable, very vulnerable.
And it's like they have a giant target right on their back, and they can't get away, you know, and whether the fines are made up or whether they have a heart problem or whatever it is, they're losing their home, and there's no way for them to get out. And it's the saddest thing in the world for me not to be able, or anybody, to be able to help them.
I know. And you can't help them except go to the legislators and bang their stupid heads together and say, what are you thinking? Ban fines.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's abusive. I mean, that's really, if you're going to have to force people to live in these, I can't even say it on the air.
Well, I told one woman recently who was being fined for not trimming her bushes, and she had a health problem and just couldn't do it. And
yeah.
she was in her 70s, and her home is paid for. And I said, do you belong to a church? And she said, yes. And knowing what I know, and knowing that there are no options, and knowing that she's a target, or she's being targeted, I said, do you belong to a church? She said, yes. And I said, reach out to your pastor, ask your church, your congregation to help you, to come and trim your bushes. And that's all I could come up with.
Yeah. But that's a really good answer, and good advice, too, because I think the churches, we probably need to be able to reach out to the churches and get them involved, because it's their people that are being targeted.
Exactly. Well, that idea came to me because of that couple out west who was being fined for not painting their home, and the husband and wife both had health problems, and they were on a fixed income, and it was a church that came and painted the house for them, and this was like a year or two ago, and I actually looked up the church, and I made a donation.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that story, Sarah. Make sure it's in your next book. Make sure that's in your next book, please.
I will. Thank you.
But no, that's really very true, and I'd never really thought about the churches. But there was also a story, and I think it was in the Kansas City Star, one of Judy Thomas's stories, about the ramp for the kid who handicapped kid, and the
yeah.
church came and built the ramp so they could push their kid up the, and the kid was adopted or a foster child or something, and was in
right.
a wheelchair, and to help the couple, the church came and built the ramp, and the HOA just went absolutely berserk, as you and I both know, that's
mm-hmm.
a violation of the fair housing laws and ADA. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they're going to nitpick. They're going to do, well, you've got to plant petunias here, and you've got to plant, you know, irises there, and you've got, you know, these we're not dealing with normal people in HOAs. We're really not. We're
no,
not dealing.
And one developer told me, and this is so true, he said, nobody runs for the board unless they have an agenda.
That's true.
And you never know whether that agenda is a good agenda or an evil agenda.
That's absolutely true. And That brings me back to what I've always been saying, is that this is a scheme, a housing scheme that's just doomed to fail. It's not going to work. You can't tweak it, Sarah, can you?
No. And it's not, unless there's some sort of government oversight or, you know.
But why do we need it? Why do we need government oversight when we have such an abysmal system?
I don't know how we're ever going to get out from underneath the recorded covenants.
Hey, listen, if they found a way to increase density, let me tell you, the courts would do away with the recorded covenants. And you yourself, in your book, talk about all of the problems, construction problems, the moldy condos, the illnesses, the people that are getting sick because of these shabbily, shoddily built places. They're not going to last forever. We're not talking about the pyramids.
Well, that's true. As a real estate, I was an appraiser for a number of years, and I ran an appraisal company.
You've done it all.
Say again?
I said, you've done it all. You know this business inside and out.
Yes, I was kind of born into it, I guess.
Yeah,
but
you
as
were.
As an appraiser, one of the things that we always had to do was estimate something called economic life. And as you said, these things aren't going to last forever. The economic life, typically, you know, FHA wants to see at least 40, 45 years of economic life on a property. What I'm seeing in many of these HOAs, like the ones that were written up in the Washington Post recently, their economic life is less than 20 years. The economic life being how long can they be economically viable. And in some cases, remember the one that they don't, the pool has been closed for the past 5 years and they can't afford to fix the roads and everything. Those communities may have an economic life of less than 10 years before they're condemned and raised, which is happening in some communities, as you know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have a feeling that, you know, now they say, oh, you can't change it. It's in the covenants, and you cannot change the covenants without doing this, that, and the other. Well, you know, going back to the early years when they first started building these stupid things, mass-producing HOAs, because they've been building them for a while, but mass-producing the HOAs and in the early days of CAI, and when you started to get, because initially, remember, CAI did not include attorneys because attorneys just did not exist. There was no legal foundation for an HOA. So when the attorneys came on and they started writing all these governing documents, to amend a governing document, to amend the CC&R, it required a 99% or 95% affirmative vote for the first 20 or 25 years, which made it extremely difficult to amend anything, which is what they wanted because they didn't want their brilliance tampered with. It didn't work in real life. They didn't want it mucked about with. Then they realized that, oh, we've got all these legislators and they're going our way on this. So now we need to go in and update all of these old governing documents to give the associations greater powers. But oops, we can't get 95% affirmative vote. So now they're making it very, very easy. Now they want to be able to go to court and say, Your Honor, we've tried twice to get the homeowners to amend these governing documents. They refuse to show up. They refuse to vote on it. We want you to change it. We want the courts to change it.
The system is just so flawed. It is so flawed.
The thinking is so corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
The thinking is so corrupt.
And one of the worst pieces of legislation that President Obama recently signed into law was lowering the owner occupancy ratio requirements for FHA loans.
Hey, that'll bring it crashing a lot quicker.
Yes, and it totally opens up first of all, there aren't enough FHA-approved buildings. because many associations don't want to apply because they don't want those types of people living in their building, which is discriminatory. But there's nothing mandatory about associations that they have to be FHA approved. But the fact that
in order to get FHA funding, they do, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But by lowering the owner occupancy ratio, it is putting borrowers at even greater risk of having their associations taken over by investors and being forced out at a lower purchase price. So there's so much more risk associated with these changes, and nobody sees it.
When did all this happen?
It will bear fruit in the next 10 or 15 years, and then they'll probably reverse it, but it's a very, very bad piece of legislation.
When did he sign this? Because this has flown below the radar for me.
Within the past couple of months.
Okay. Wow. Because he had the affirmatively advancing the fair housing, which is also going to screw up things royally.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit of a mess, too. Sarah, you're talking about these problems, and you're talking about all of the people who've been reaching out to you, sending you their stories and asking for help. We know that it happens. And yet CAI keeps coming up with all these surveys, and they insist. Every time something bad happens, there's a new survey put out by CAI. And predictably, the results are always the same. Everybody's so happy, happy, happy. And what you're hearing is isolated incidents and anecdotal stories and, on and on and on. How do you combat that? How do we combat those surveys and come up with the truth? Because you and I know the truth.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
We combat it in two ways. One is what they call the outside game in Washington, D.C. There's the inside game, where you play with politicians. And the outside game is where you alert the media. So we need to keep reporting these stories to the media over and over. If you have a problem, take it to the media. And number two is there's an organization called the Coalition for Community Housing Policy in the Public Interest. And it's CHIPPI for short. It's CHPPI.org. And last year, it's a relatively new organization, just about a year old now. Last year, a survey was put out. We had over 330 responses of individuals giving opinions about their community associations and ranking their satisfaction or dissatisfaction and what they considered their major issues. We are releasing a new survey. It will be coming out within the next few weeks. And would love to have all of your listeners participate, share it with their networks. Our goal is to at least get more than 1,000 responses on this survey. So we are reaching out to all the organizational HOA leaders across the country to distribute the survey, and we're very excited to see the results. So I think we're going to achieve our goal of at least 1,000 responses.
Oh, I think that's going to be very doable. So it's CHIPPI?
Yes, CHPPI.org. And the website also has a lot of resources that Deborah Goonan really helped put together. If you're visiting the site, go to the resources page. There's information on everything from anxiety to the disabled.
And have we been getting any feedback from the people who go to that website?
Oh, yes. We've had quite a few registrations and people that are requesting more information. All positive feedback, just wonderful feedback.
So what are the biggest problems that you're hearing through your book, through CHIPPI, what are some of the big issues? What are today's major topics?
I'd say that people typically reach out. There are some people that just kind of coast. They're on the surface of the water. The people that really dive deep are the ones that have the greatest problem. And as I mentioned earlier, those are the ones that are in danger of losing their homes, or they're victims of discrimination. I mean, at some point, it almost becomes like a nursery rhyme that is repeated over and over and over again. And you hate to cut somebody off and say, hey, I've heard this story a thousand times.
I know.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
But the people that are reaching out are the ones with the biggest problems. You know, they're under that water and they're drowning, and they're grasping at any straw they possibly can as a lifeline.
What I find interesting, and I'm sure you've had the same thing happen to you, is I'll get people who call me or write to me and they go, hey, I've got a problem, and I bet you've never heard this one. This is just amazing. You're going to want to do a show about it. Heard that, done that, been there. You got the T-shirt. What else have you got?
Uh-huh.
And it's the same stuff.
Occasionally you'll hear something with a slightly different twist, but the stories seem to be consistently, as I mentioned, you know, the targets seem to be the same.
Yeah.
And the stories, after a while, they're just, it's almost like a recipe, like a cookbook.
But it is a recipe. You know, that's a perfect word to use. It is a recipe, because guess where it's coming from?
Where?
Guess who's teaching them how to do
this? Oh, yes!
You know, it's a recipe. There's a recipe book. If you've got one of those gadflies out there who's not towing the line, who's being difficult, who's asking embarrassing questions, here's how you deal with them, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So it is, I like that. A cookbook, a recipe, that's perfect. That's exactly what happens.
And they follow the same recipe over and over and over again. If you have an owner, and it goes back to that issue of control, which was mentioned on the Byron Hanke video, if you have an owner that's getting out of control, here's the recipe for fixing that. Have an attorney, send them a letter, find them, bill them for the attorney's letter, make stuff up, you know, and you could just run with it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the things that I've heard, in fact, I had Jerry Berg on not too long ago, and he was... I mean, when you think about it, the guy was beaten with a crowbar by the president of his association, who was a debunked or debenched judge. I mean, this guy was a judge at one point, and he decides he doesn't like one of his homeowners, so he goes after him with a crowbar and puts him in jail, or puts him in the hospital, and he never goes to jail. The former judge never goes to jail. Nothing happens to him.
I listened to that show. It was quite amazing.
There's a serious problem that goes on in this country with what's going on here.
It's truly frightening. I mean, you only need to look at Trayvon Martin's case to, you know, that's the tip of the iceberg.
So, your new book, is it going to be Escaping Condo Jail Number 2? What are you going to focus on in the second book?
Well, all the things that we've learned since the first book was published. it's the landscape is much more vast than I ever imagined, and also the CAI, which is the only voice that Washington, D.C., or any state chapter hears on HOA issues. They don't hear your voice, Sue. They don't hear my voice. They don't hear...
Oh, they know me. That, at least in Virginia, they know who I am.
All right. I stand corrected. They know you. But when I was in Washington, and I had Fannie Mae, and I had the head of Federal Home Finance Authority all spouting CAI statistics.
Yeah.
And that's the only voice they hear.
Yeah.
And they use RAP Index as their connector to speed up all of their political action who knows who. That's all very fine and good. But Association Evaluation, which is one of my companies, we collected data on 50,000 homeowners associations in Illinois alone. And CAI said there are only 18,250. Now, that's a huge discrepancy.
That's, I was going to say, that's enormous. Don't tell CAI, so, they want to go and get money from them.
Right. So, I mean, they're really vastly underreporting. So I said to myself, self, you need to take one of their board of trustees out to lunch. So I did. And I asked the trustee, I said, look, it was a pleasant lunch, and I said, look, we have collected data in Illinois alone on 50,000 associations. You're standing a little over 18,000. I said, whose numbers are correct, yours or ours? And the answer, the trustee looked me straight in the eye and said, your numbers are more correct. So if they're underreporting to that extent in Illinois alone,
yeah,
how much are they underreporting in Florida, California, Colorado,
Texas? Yeah.
And if they're saying it's a $90 billion a year industry, perhaps you can double or triple that number in terms of money that is not, that, as John Sellers would say, is probably in violation of the Patriot Act.
You know, that $90 billion or $85 billion or whatever the hell it is that they're claiming, that's only in... that's only an assessment income. That does not include.
Is that assessments and reserves? I'm not really clear.
Well, reserves are from assessments. You know,
mm-hmm.
you get the assessment. Part of your assessment is supposed to go to reserves. So,
right,
if you pay $100 a month and 70 goes into operating, then 30 goes into reserves. So it's the same. If they're looking at the $100. But that does not take into account all the other garbage that they charge, the fines, for one thing.
Yes.
In Illinois, you have, what is it you call the, where they can evict you from your house and rent out your house from under you and collect
forcible
the rent.
Forcible retainer, I think they call
it. Yeah, forcible retainer. Does that include that?
No.
The abuses that have happened there, it's just incredible.
Oh, and the transfer fees.
The transfer fees?
I mean, forget about the fines. The transfer fees and the document fees. I had one title agent reach out to me recently, and she said, just for the one-page document, for what we call it a paid assessment letter here in Illinois, it's called an estoppel down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But just to get that one piece of paper before closing, typically the management company would charge $50, $100, $250. She said one management company charged her $1,000 for one piece of paper for a paid assessment letter, and she said, "Why not make it $1 million?"
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, because
so those fees on, and not to mention you have all those document resellers like Community Archives, which is owned by Associa.
Mm-hmm.
And Associa promotes Community Archives on their website as an additional income stream for management companies. You want the declaration? Oh, that's $75. You want the budget? That's another $50. You want this? You want that? And so the borrower, just to get a disclosure, ends up paying anywhere between $400 to $800. And in some cases, there's an association here in Chicago. They charge $1,000 for one set of documents, and if you want to rush on that, it's $4,000 just for you to get the information you need in order to make an informed decision.
How accurate is the information?
Who knows? You know,
when I was in real estate, it was $25 for HOAs. And that went up, increased to 50, but it was actual cost up to, there's a cap. And now I don't know what it is. I mean, they just go ahead and let you go ahead and do that. And now it's become an income stream for management companies. Used to be that it went to the HOA because the manager who was supposed to do that, provide the documents, actually worked for the HOA and did it during the time that they were being paid for.
Right.
And then they went in and they changed that. And they go, oh, yeah.
Well, many of the governing documents say a reasonable cost to copy. Well, those documents, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Those documents were back in the day before the Internet, right?
Yeah. Now you don't need that. You can just download them.
Right. But they're charging click fees.
Click fees?
I don't think there's a single governing document out there that mentions the word click fee. And you have companies, Mutual of Omaha has Condo Search, a group of their people spun off and formed HomeWise, all these document resellers that charge click fees to the management company. And that's where their profit is. And the click fee might be $25, $30. The consumer doesn't even know they're paying the click fee, and nowhere is it authorized in the governing document.
In your book, Escaping Condo Jail, you have a whole lot of drawings and cartoons and pictures, and I love it. I love all of that. So if this, I often think in cartoons, but I cannot draw a straight line, much less a cartoon. But I've always envisioned, the way I see the HOAs is the legislators holding the homeowners down, tying their hands and feet together so they cannot protect themselves, while the managers and HOA attorneys go through their pockets and just dump their wallets, the contents of their wallets, into a big pot and walk away with it. That's a picture that I would love to see in your next book. If you're using the same people. Huh?
Wait, all those illustrations were done by John Michael Downs, who was an illustrator for the Chicago Daily News, and Don DeBatt contacted him to produce all those. And they're actually in full color. In the paperback edition, they're in black and white, but in the hardcover edition, which is a special order, they're all in color, and they're beautiful. And one of the illustrations that he did was just as you described.
Oh, really?
I thought it was, yes. But it was a little too graphic and dark to put in the book, so I framed it and put it in my office.
I want to see a picture of that. I want to see it. But I've always imagined, a picture's worth a thousand words. I've always imagined the legislators just holding a homeowner down while their pockets are being emptied.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's happening, don't you agree? I would love
that. There is one illustration at the back of the book with Uncle Sam standing in it, and he's holding a clipboard, and he's checking HOAs. I think it's the final chapter, or no, the next to the last chapter.
Okay.
But in color is a beautiful illustration because he's wearing that big red, white, and blue hat.
So are you going to use the same guy to do the illustrations?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So tell me, how far along are you in the book? How soon can we expect it?
Oh, well, we're up here in the mountains, and our goal is to do nothing but write. So we hope to have it finished within the next couple of months, and then, it'll be the time that it takes to get it to market. There is no money, really, in writing books. I think authors write because they love to write and they love to educate or they love to tell a story. And so we're doing this out of, a real calling and a real need. So the next edition, I'm not quite sure what'll be in there, but a lot of meat.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I heard yesterday, last night at a meeting, someone said that he'd read that authors, artists, anybody who's creative, as it just has something within them that they feel compelled to just put out there. And mm-hmm. So they do it because, I guess basically it's a passion. They've got to share this out, get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in your case, a lot of people who've read the book have been very, very, I think there's a certain level of comfort knowing that they're not the only ones who've been through it, that other people have also been through it.
Right. I have had a lot of board members actually contact me and ask, and this is a good thing, and ask for permission to reprint portions of the book on their community website.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like the dozen duties of the board or, and I always say, absolutely, just give me credit or give us credit, but have at it, pass it along. So I found that a CPA who was on his board, an attorney that was on his board, a money manager that was on his board, these are people reaching out and asking for reprint permission. So
I think that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. And the fact we have some solutions in there as we talked before, they're not perfect solutions, but there are some solutions and some tricks and to navigate the HOA landscape. So we'll embellish upon those.
Promise you come back when the book is done?
Yes, absolutely.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for sharing your insights, your wisdom, and everything else you do.
Shu, thank you for all that you do, and thank you for having me as your guest. It was, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.